It's crazy that we condition ourselves to practice all this crap and then we get into the workforce and we never do it. You can't just watch a PowerPoint in a room talking about your persona and then fully understand it. Of course, we're one of those crazy people that use our own product, but we use it here to do a lot of things, right? To practice and to learn and to build models around our persona and our marketing processes and stuff as well.
This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Kyle Lacey from Lessonly. Kyle is the chief marketing officer at Lessonly and has a background that was actually kind of interesting to me. He's also the author of 3 books, and hopefully we'll get to touch on that a little bit. Kyle, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I think I'm on this podcast too.
Yeah, so. You are. Thanks for being here with me.
Yeah, usually I just let the camera run.
Thanks for being here with me, man. I appreciate it.
So I guess, Kyle, first off, like, what is Lessonly and what's the problem you guys solve and who do you guys serve?
Yeah, so we're training software for what we call customer-facing teams. Well, a lot of people call customer-facing teams, but that's usually sales teams and customer service teams. Okay. So it's training and it's development of skills like practicing ticket resolution, practicing email pitches, practicing video pitches, and getting feedback on those skills in app. So we do that across sales enablement teams and we do that across customer service teams. So we serve everybody from telecom to retail to software, B2B and B2C.
So it's interesting. I was trying to think in my head because as soon as I hear training, I think like learning management system, but then you talk about skill set. So how does that differ?
Well, I think that it's similar in regard to the learn portion of it, right? You create learning and lessons and people take them and they get graded on them. What we're trying to do is move into this practice element, right? Like you're learning all this stuff. And what usually happens is that we put everybody in a room for onboarding where we put everybody in the room for a product launch and then they leave and then they never practice anything, which is crazy because all of us look up to people who practice, like musicians, athletes, and then we go to work and we're like, I don't need to practice. I'm just going to do what I've been doing for 20 years, right? So that's where I think the world's changing, where it's more about training and coaching than it is just the learning, and that's where we differentiate.
Oh, that's really interesting. It prompted something in my head because I was in Washington, D.C. last weekend for a marketing agency event. And there was a speaker by the name of Wyatt Woodsmall, who I don't know if he'll ever come on the podcast. I don't know if he likes talking to people.
Wyatt Woodsmall
is, I guess his background is NLP, which is weird to me. But then when you understand what he does is he models people that are successful. And I think the one big takeaway I had was it's like, well, whenever a lesson or learning in a particular area that he would deconstruct would fail, where they couldn't pass on the knowledge was because they weren't practicing.
Yeah, there was no practical
information. If you really boil it down. And the examples he used were really extreme. One was he was in the army and deconstructing why people couldn't grasp Morse code. So they could do it in the classroom and then they get in the real world and they had zero retention.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they couldn't.
Oh, I love that guy.
Right? So I was like.
This guy out.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's some crazy examples there. He also gives the example of Michelle Thomas. And that's something worth looking at. And this guy can teach you a language, or he passed away, but he was able to teach people a language to be able to converse in a language in 5 days.
What?
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
It just reinforces what you just said about practice.
Yeah.
I'm going to give that prelude. I won't go into it too deep, but it just reinforces that you've got a platform that understands that reality. Mm-hmm. And what's the response been to Lessonly? Like, how long have you guys been around?
We were founded in 2012. Okay. We have north of 1,000 customers.
Wow.
160 people based in Indianapolis. So it's been a process over 8 years now, right? Like the industry's changed but in regards to the idea of practice over the past 3 years has been amazing because you can measure all that stuff, right? If a rep is practicing more than another one, you're usually going to see that rep's going to be more productive. It's the same reason why I almost failed college and my friends didn't because they practiced the content and I never read anything, right? I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy that we condition ourselves to practice all this crap and then we get into the workforce and we never do it, right? So yeah, that's...
It's a good point. It's really interesting when you start thinking of that terms, like, because to your point, like, I'm a hockey guy, like, I've coached a lot of hockey teams and people are like, man, you're feels a little repetitive. And I'm like, I want as many reps as possible.
Yeah. Well, think about, think about automation and marketing and all right. the stuff that we do on, like, understand how nurture journeys are working in the sales cycle, or understand your ICP, understand your persona. Sales reps and CX reps and marketing team members have to practice this stuff so they fully understand it. They can't just watch a PowerPoint in a room talking about your persona and then they fully understand it, right? It's just, so we use it here. Of course, we're one of those crazy people that use our own product, but we use it here to do a lot of things, right? To practice and to learn and to build models around our persona and our marketing processes and stuff as well.
You know, a lot of organizations over time have invested in learning management systems. And a lot of those are really, you know, you hear it that number one, it usually falls to HR. Mm-hmm. Right? HR usually takes control of that. And number two, they're really kind of antiquated. It's almost like they've sunk cost and they're stuck in it, but then there's no modern learning model. There's no proof that it actually works either. Mm-hmm. A lot of times. So how did you guys like address that? Like, is that kind of what you're going after, or are you sidestepping it into sales directly? Like, who do you typically sell?
Yeah, well, we typically sell to sales enablement or an L&D team that's specific to customer service. Okay. And I think that customer service is also going to go through this renaissance that sales enablement did, and we're going to see more enablement teams in customer service orgs. But originally, Max founded the company on being the anti-LMS. Like, that's how he rolled the company out. We're focusing on learning. We're not focusing on compliance and all this stuff that we think can be done separately. We're focusing on how do you teach people. I mean, the mission is we help people do better work so they can live better lives.
Oh, well, that's a big mission.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So it's very broad, right? but that's how we've kind of sidestepped that. And we just believe that functional training should live in the team and not in HR.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. So unless it's a progressive, I mean, there are edge cases where if it's a progressive HR team, then great. Awesome. But usually we believe it should live in the team.
The reality is the knowledge and the expertise and theoretically the best performers yes. in customer success or customer support yep. are going to be the leaders of those teams, right?
Yep.
And the same
Absolutely.
Thing for sales and even marketing. Like, marketing's, you know, kind of black magic compared to those other ones. Like, it's less repetitive maybe. There's probably repetitive tasks, but I don't feel like it's as structured maybe in the approach, but maybe that's wrong. But I don't know. How do you guys organize your marketing? You're CMO, but like,
yeah.
Like, do you use Lessonly in the marketing organization?
Yeah. I mean, we'll use it. We use it more as a tool to communicate to other teams, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if we have an event or we have an ebook or we have we need to deliver process around, here's how you send direct mail out from our swag closet. We use Lessonly for all that training.
Okay.
All of our competitive stuff is done in Lessonly. Battle cards are updated. If we find out a new feature was released from a competitor, we'll update that lesson and shoot it back out to the sales team so they can take it. So we use it more as a communication tool.
What is a battle card?
Battle card, like it's basically a template that you use to organize competitive information. And it was called a battle card, I'm pretty sure, because they used to be actual cards that people would laminate and give to sales reps.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Thank you for asking that. I assume a lot of people.
Well, it's the first I've heard of it. I get the concept. Like, you know, if you read Ray Dalio and they talk about how they have the, I guess it's like the sports cards or the baseball cards of all their team members, so they know how to communicate with one another.
Yeah.
And is that what they call it? Baseball cards?
I don't know. I know that's what they do. I don't know yeah. if that's what they called it. But battle cards, basically a card that you take into battle if you're battling like a competitor.
I was picturing like Dungeons and Dragons or something.
I mean, that'd be cooler than just a lesson, but yeah.
I like that's it. That's the idea. The evil avatar of your competitor.
I might do that. That's a good idea.
You should do it. Graphic it up, man. I might have to sell this with you. We might have to partner on this.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Enter your information and here's your battle card. Okay, so I want to go back a little bit.
Okay.
So you wrote 3 books and two of them were for dummies.
Yes.
What was that experience like and what did you write?
It was good. I mean, my first book was Twitter Marketing for Dummies, and it was basically a primer for how businesses should think about Twitter, and that was 2009, I think. And then through that I wrote it was way later than that, maybe 2010, 2011. But after that, I wrote Branding Yourself, which was basically a book for if you wanted to reinvent yourself using social media. So I wrote it with a friend of mine that was in his 40s at the time, and I was in my 20s. So it helped balance like somebody trying to get a job and somebody that's trying to reinvent themselves to get a job.
Got it.
And then Social CRM for Dummies, I wrote at ExactTarget. It was a failure because nobody talked about social CRM.
Yeah. Did that concept really take hold in here? I don't know.
Nope.
It was kind of like, yeah, we're already doing that.
Yeah, I wrote it. I wrote it with John from Nimble. He founded some CRM platform. I do not remember. I hope he doesn't listen to this because he's going to kill me. He started Nimble, which is a social CRM tool. But it just didn't take off.
So that's interesting. So now you mentioned ExactTarget, and for people that don't know, ExactTarget was a fairly successful marketing automation company, started out of Indianapolis or headquartered in Indianapolis, right?
Started and headquartered in Indianapolis. Yep.
Which is where you still are. Like you've moved back.
Yep. There.
And it was an exit, which is a company that Salesforce bought and became the Marketing Cloud. And then they had Pardot, I think, as part of that transaction, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pardot. ExactTarget had bought Pardot previously, before that.
So how early were you at ExactTarget?
Oh, I joined. It was a rocket ship. I joined in 2012. So the year I joined, it was, I think we hired 600 people that year.
Oh my God, is that true? Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, there was a lot. I mean, I'm probably exaggerating, but there was a lot. Like my onboarding class, I think we had 40 people in my onboarding class. So I had a great experience with ExactTarget. Yeah. It was awesome, but it was just it's a different world, right? You're eclipsing $300 million in revenue and it's like a rocket ship. Wow. So you learned a lot, but I was definitely not part of that team that learned all the trials and tribulations of building a company from the ground up. When I joined,
you were on that path already.
They had done all the hard work.
I think there's another Indianapolis startup out of one of the founders, right?
Oh, there's a lot. Yeah. They co-founded a venture capital firm called High Alpha.
Oh, okay.
And it spins off a lot of software companies here. So it's a $100 million fund here. And they have a High Alpha studio, which co-founds companies.
Venture studio type scenario?
Yeah. Yep.
So a little bit of equity, a little bit of work.
Yep.
Really cool. Oh, I'll have to look into that. That's really interesting. So what your experience wasn't necessarily as a founder there, but you got to be involved in a really high growth startup. Were there any lessons you took away from that, either marketing wise or just, you know, growth wise?
I learned pretty quickly how to consolidate content. So I ran the content marketing team, which we started about halfway through my tenure there. So we were producing content for 7 countries in 5 different languages. So think of like state of reports that a lot of people have now. We were doing it for state of marketing in Germany, state of marketing in Japan, blah, blah, blah. What I learned was the art of capitalizing on ebooks and how you break them apart, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I wrote a state of marketing report for Germany, I knew I had 5 one sheets that I could break out of that report that sales could use in the sales cycle. So instead of doing things one off, we tried to capitalize and be more efficient on content production. The other thing was I learned pretty quickly that creating a culture, creating a strong culture is important, which I think a lot of people talk about, but creating a culture that the customers also love, like Orange culture was the thing. Like we are all part of the Orange culture was the thing at Exact Target.
Okay.
But our customers would also say that. And I learned that because we created something like that, it helped us become a market leader, and it helped us grow even bigger because our customers were so involved in the idea of building Exact Target and the idea of being involved in Exact Target. And that's something that I have always tried to build at any company I'm at, which after Exact Target, of course, Salesforce has its own unique identity, right? Mm-hmm. And OpenView was a little bit different as a venture capital firm, but Lessonly, we have tried to do that for sure. I mean, it's just extremely powerful when you can get advocates like that.
So it's almost like, it sounds like, what was it about Orange culture that resonated with customers? Like, what was the culture that they said, I relate to that? Or was that why they bought into it?
I think it was just the people that they dealt with.
Okay.
Like everybody felt, and when I say everybody, I mean almost all of the 2,000 employees. We all lived it, right? They could feel it. When they came to events, they could feel it. When they were talking to other customers, they could feel it. Like the vision and the mission and the values of the company, they also agreed with. And marketing spent a lot of time marketing, for lack of a better term, the Orange culture, both the employees have to believe it first, right? So you got to spend a lot of time enabling on the Orange culture, the culture within the company, so that the employees then spread it to the customers. And then the customers then spread it to
there's a consistency of the thread
peers, right? And then you get a lot of referral stuff and all that.
So in your current role, because that kind of brings us up, you went from Exact Target, Salesforce, a little bit of venture capital time, which I'm sure was exciting. And then now back in Lessonly, which was actually a portfolio company you were mentioning out of that. So now your role is chief marketing officer. What is the state of the nation on marketing in your opinion? Like, what do you guys, like, if you're a smaller company or a growing company and you're selling B2B, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So what is the state of B2B marketing? Like, what's the effective approach? And then what role does, you know, those factors, like what are the factors and what role do they play in the entire success of the business? In seven easy parts. Sorry. Maybe it's the worst question I've ever asked on this entire thing. And you get to answer it. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, you know, you're in a growing company. What do you guys do day to day that's really effective?
Yeah, I think there's two trends going on right now in high growth marketing. There's product led, which is like Typeforms, Pendos, MailChimps of the world, mm-hmm. where the product sells itself and it's a lot about volume, right? And those are awesome companies. Like, it's the new trend, it's great. And then you've got the go-to-market software where you've got sales teams, marketing teams, which is where Lessonly's at. For us, it is all about experience first. When we think about our direct mail, or we think about our events, or we think about our website, we think like B2C marketers, not like B2B marketers, where I'm not sending a water bottle to a prospect, I'm sending a llama, a Lego llama that they can build on their own, right? Or we're not doing a t-shirt, we're doing a board game that we designed ourselves.
That's interesting.
So it's more about how do you disrupt the normal way of thinking when you get a box in the mail where they're going to open it up and they're expecting to see a tumbler and a stress ball and a pen or whatever the hell you could buy from a swag store.
I think what strikes me about those two things you just said is similar to the philosophy of Lessonly. It's like practice or doing, like it's hands-on where I got to build the Lego, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a consistent thread there that you can make a jump to a point for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we kind of fell into this, but it's works really well, is that we don't ever lead with the product. Like People like feature. There are plenty of feature wars you can get into. Like we just launched this feature and it increases productivity by 30%. But everybody is saying that, right? Everybody's saying the same thing. So we go a little bit higher and say, we want to help your team do better work. We happen to have this platform that you can use, but we'd also like to talk to you about leadership, like the relational value of one-on-ones, like our values of sharing before ready and nonviolent communication. And we try to bring in the human element to this because ultimately I believe that's what sells something. So we go experience first, non-product first, right? Like our user conference, we don't talk about the product on our keynote stage at all.
Really?
At all. So I don't know if it's we'll have like we'll have breakouts and training sessions about the product.
Yeah.
But on the keynote stage, it's all about personal leader and leadership development.
Interesting. So would you describe that as like your framework or values for success in the area? And this is just software that allows you to reinforce it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We call it the Do Better Work method. We have a methodology behind it. Our CEO wrote a book called Do Better Work. Like, we're framing it around this idea that we help people do better work so they can live better lives. We just happen to think that training software is the way to help them live a better life because they're better at what they do.
Interesting. And I think I saw one of your Instagram posts, someone putting up Do Better Work on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all, it's our, yeah.
But now I get it.
Yeah. It's all, oh yeah. I guess without context, that seems a little weird.
That seems mean. I don't know.
Like do better work. You're out.
Like my grandfather would say to me, do better work.
That's true. But yeah. So in terms of philosophy, that's how we, if we don't believe that something is going to create a better experience for this prospect or this customer, we will rethink it, right? And we're not perfect, but that's how we approach most marketing, which is why from a budgeting perspective, I try to keep a portion of the budget that's used for brand that we don't try to measure ROI.
Okay.
Because because now you have paid and all that stuff that we have ratios on and all the ROI.
You separate it out where it's like, listen, this is really awareness of who Lessonly is.
Yeah.
Positioning it. This is the mechanical stuff on paid AdWords or keywords that brings the traffic in for funnels or whatever.
Yeah. And to be clear, we had to earn that. My team had to earn that, right? Like if we weren't winning every quarter, then I wouldn't have this like, hey, we can do whatever we want on the brand side, and not whatever we want, but within the constructs of the budget.
Yeah.
But it's, we are winning and we have this idea of experience and making sure that it's fun and interesting and people enjoy interacting with us. Cause there's not enough time in the day.
It's probably really easy for us to all go, when you're marketing all brand or all message. But then, you know, if you're an independent business, it's hard to like, well, I'm not getting return on that, right?
Sure.
And then the flip side, what you're describing is I can put AdWords and keywords and get traffic and I focus on the mechanics of it, but there's no joy in it. I'm not really communicating this part over here. And it sounds like what you're advocating is, you know, you have to do both.
Yeah, but you can make paid ads joyful. I don't know if that's,
well, but it's hard to do
without the best word, but right? Yeah, but let's take it down. Like it's, let's take it down to the SMB level, like independent contractor.
Yep.
If you focus and target, right, like 10 companies you want to get into in your city because you're a financial advisor, whatever the hell you do.
I don't.
You can, or you have a small software company of 10
perfect.
People.
There we go. I can and
it's, yeah, and it's profitable and you can spend a little bit of money. You have a targeted list of accounts. You're not boiling the ocean. You can personalize direct mail. Mm. If they went to college at IU, Indiana University, go on Amazon and buy something from IU and send it to them in the mail. And you could do that for 10 targeted accounts. And guess what? Your conversion rate on that is going to be way better than if you send a stupid postcard that you sent to everybody.
Got it.
So I will.
What do you think the state of that, like you're talking a lot about, you've talked a couple times about direct mail, for example, like physical things.
Yep.
do you still use outbound cold email, or are you only use opt-in? Like, how are you, what's your mix?
So mix is, I'd say out of 100% of top of funnel, 60% is inbound to the website.
Okay.
20% is for commercial. It's like, we have two segments. We have commercial and enterprise, so they're a little bit different. For commercial, 60% is inbound, 20% is outbound set calls, like outbound SDRs, and then the other 20% self-sourced from account executives. On the enterprise side, it's mostly outbound, and we have some inbound.
Okay.
So it's, we do a lot of direct mail. We do a lot of outbound stuff. We do a lot of inbound as well.
So in that scenario, are the reps all sending email, or is, are there marketing, cold marketing campaigns on email as well?
It's all reps. We don't do any database marketing, email marketing.
Oh, none. Okay.
None.
So you're managing like the paid stuff, the branding stuff, dealing anything that's...
Well, we don't do it at all as a company. That's why we don't have forms on our website. We only have a demo form. We don't gate any content. We have one list that we build, and that's a weekly email from our CEO, and that's it.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're not like getting, you're not trying to bribe people to give their information.
No.
Just like consume it will.
Consume it will. And what we found, what was interesting was when we ungate, we blew our site up like about 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. And we ungated all of our PDFs and they all started ranking on Google search.
That's interesting. Because they're not locked behind some sort of a sales funnel.
No, and Google's scan. I mean, Google knows everything, but they're scanning all of them, right? So
it gave you like SEO juice to come in because you had all this content.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And we have, I mean, a lot goes into that. We have a really strong backlinking strategy and stuff that we've been doing for, that they've been doing for 6 years here. But if I cannot win by trying to sell the people who want to buy from us, and I have to build databases to convince people to talk to us, then we are not positioning or building the right product, in my opinion.
What is the first, like, you know, there's obviously that awareness scale before someone's ready to even think about buying. If they're at ground zero and they're not even aware of you, what's their first touch usually?
Usually Google. We have very, very strong organic search rankings.
So I'm searching for a solution to a problem, by keyword term, and I find you.
Yeah, we have a vendor and a full-time person on staff that all they do is work on organic.
Makes sense. Yeah, you know, recently I'm like, I should not ignore this. Like, I'm really good at producing content, but sometimes it feels like it's not necessarily, productive, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what am I getting out of it? What's my ROI on it, right? Yeah. It's my time. But, you know, I think what you're saying is interesting because I think search is super relevant still.
Absolutely.
It's how we're all looking for a solution to a problem. So that makes a lot of sense.
Well, and you know, whoever's listening to this or watching or whatever, there's got to be context, right? Like, our model works because it's our model, right? There are companies out there that are building databases that, you know, Udi from Gong, he's a great database. Like, they do a lot of email marketing and it works really well for them. Hmm. And they have the experience side of it. So it's for each his own, right? I mean, that's the reality, is that each model is different, but we've just found that it's better for us if we focus primarily on the experience side. And if people want to hear about us or they want to learn about us, they're going to come to us and we'll create the best experience possible.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I appreciate you sharing that insight. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to touch on around your department or your approach, but I'm sure we can just get the CRM for dummies and learn it all.
No, please don't buy any of those. They're all out of print.
Okay. I usually buy Ray's book. But.
Well, the funny story is that the second edition of Twitter Marketing for Dummies we launched, and the day after Twitter completely redesigned their UI.
Oh, Jesus.
So we were like, all right, well.
I feel like if anybody wrote a book about Uber, it doesn't matter when you wrote the book, that the UI would always be different.
Right.
Every time I open this app is, what is this? This is new, right? I've never seen a company like Uber that redesigns its UI every week.
Continuous rapid improvement.
Something.
That's what they're doing.
Brand confusion on purpose. I don't know what the All right. Well, I want to be conscious of your time, Kyle. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you think that we should, that would be helpful?
I'm excited about. I am excited about everything. I'm excited about the future of marketing. I'm excited about the future of software. I think that the alignment between marketing and sales is exciting. I think it's changing rapidly. And I'm just glad that I can serve in this capacity at this company, because it's a fun time to work. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, no problem. I'm going to wrap up with two questions or two items. The first one is, how are you, Kyle, changing the world?
Oh man, how am I changing the world?
I mean, you can make it a royal we, maybe it's something.
Well, so I think that we have quite, so there's two things of Lessonly, is that we have a foundation where we give 1% of our revenue called Brighter Indy, that picks four nonprofits to serve, and they all serve children. So whether that's education needs or athletic or whatever, I think that's a huge thing. And as we grow, they get more money, right? So that's one. And we also do a lot of gift cards for like demos and for gifts that have with Donors Choose. So Donors Choose it's donorschoose.org, and you can give somebody $50 to give to a classroom in their city.
Oh, cool.
So teachers will post on there, like, I'm trying to do some STEM stuff, and you can give $50 for their project.
Oh my God, I had a crazy conversation last night about STEM. We shouldn't go down that path.
No, let's not go down that path. But Donors Choose. So
just stop the other stuff and do the STEM, for God's sake.
But I agree. I agree, but
what you're doing, but that's amazing.
But Lessonly, we tend to focus on things that help elementary, like junior high type.
That's amazing. Ages. I mean, that's a great answer, and that's great work that you guys are doing. Okay, so I will wrap up with one final thing, which is, when we have interesting guests on the podcast, we ask you to nominate another interesting guest, someone that you know. Usually we talk to experts and entrepreneurs that are doing exciting things in the world. So who would you, Kyle, like to nominate?
I would nominate. Can I nominate multiple people?
You can.
Or just one? I've got two.
As long as you can introduce me to them.
I had
someone on the last one who's like, you should get these guys. I'm like, thanks. It's not helpful.
First one's a guy named Daniel Incandela. He's CMO at Conga. I worked for him at Exact Target.
Okay.
He has a pretty awesome background with racing. He worked at the Speedway here in Indianapolis. He's worked for an art museum, and he's a brilliant marketer. I think he has a degree in anthropology.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he's one of the more creative marketers I've ever had the pleasure of working with. That's number one.
What's his last name?
Incandela.
Incandela. Okay. That's one. That's a great one.
Second one is our CEO, Maxio. Okay. So he's a young guy that has an emotional intelligence level that I will never come close to.
He's already beaten by just saying the word.
Yeah. And he writes these weekly notes that are all about personal development. It has nothing to do with Lessonly, and he is truly inspiring, and I love working for the guy. It's his first company. Well, it's his second company, but this is his first real company out of, he's 30, 31.
That's amazing. Those sound like amazing nominations. So the first one, Daniel Incandela from Conga. And then Matthew, what's Matthew's last name?
Max Yoder.
Max Yoder, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
So Max Yoder and Daniel, you have both been nominated by Kyle to be a future guest on the Automate and Grow podcast. We will accept that nomination and the introductions. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your insight. And everybody got to go check out Lessonly. We got to get some skills going.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me.
No problem. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode of Automate and Grow.